There we go. That was plenty.
No headphones in.
Oh, I don't want.
Right, okay. I'll just turn this down. Oh, that'll be okay.
That's
what it did.
That's quite an entrance.
Yeah. Okay. So this seems to be DS106.
Broadcast.
Yeah.
From the kitchen. that was the kettle boiling.
Have another cup of tea. And it'll probably sound better in a minute. I'm John Johnson, and I'm just going to start and introduce this because I'm dead excited. I have been following at CogDog Mr. Alan Levine, is that the way you pronounce it? Or
Levine,
okay.
Tell me the Scottish pronunciation.
Yeah, I've not got a Scottish pronunciation. My pronunciation's usually bad. But I'm really kind of thrilled because I've been reading Mr. CogDog's blog ever since I started, been interested in educational technology. And now I'm sitting in my kitchen having a yak and I've got the CogDog in the house, in the kitchen, which is really good. And what I'm hoping to do here is archive this and broadcast it on, I was going to say our radio station, which is called EduTalk. And it's very much DS106 inspired, if not, probably not with the sort of anarchic vibe, but the technology we've taken on and moved on from sort of podcasting that we were doing to radio,
to live broadcast,
which gives you lots of interest. And my favourite word at the moment is affordances.
Affordances,
because I've been listening to Americans. But it's kind of interesting compared to podcasting.
So are you also setting up so you have continual content playing?
We've just got archive stuff, because what we've got there is about 1,000 pieces of audio that have been contributed by various folk, and we just run that through the radio. We only do live stuff once a week or twice a week now, because my partner's doing a kind of he's a bit more academic than myself, and he's doing a professional learning one for teachers that's aimed at sort of master's level. Whereas what I normally do is just have a chat to people about education in fairly broad and loose terms. But I'm just dead excited, actually, to talk to yourself.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for hosting me. It's one of these wonderful things where I can travel to a different country and ask people if I can come stay in their homes, and they say yes.
Yeah. what an opportunity. And we probably should eventually once we get into this a wee bit, have some sort of topic for a wee while.
Okay.
A wee while topic.
We should thank Leslie Limbaugh, 1% Yellow, for being willing to share the stream. As protocol does, it works well.
Yeah, I hadn't realised, because I probably was not paying too much attention. I got a bit excited there and just sort of tried to blunder into DS106 radio. Yeah, Leslie, if you're out there, I don't think I've met you, but thank you very much. And what I usually talk about is somewhere about school education. And you're more tertiary, what we'd call tertiary education. You don't use that term in America, tertiary? Primary, secondary, tertiary, no?
No, generally we have primary, secondary up through grade 12.
Yeah.
And then we talk generally about higher education.
Higher education. Well, as I say, higher education here as well, I guess.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've been interested in, and then quite a lot of things I've been following of your work lately, have been to do with DS106. I mean, before that, there was all that wonderful storytelling stuff, 50 Ways to Tell a Web 2 Story, which you did for a long time.
Yeah,
producing work on that. And
2007 was the first one, and
right,
a trip to Australia.
Yeah. And that had a direct impact, I think, on primary education, which I'm interested in. I mean, a lot of people here, a lot of people, I think, use stuff from the wiki and things there.
And I have these grand plans to finally sit down for a year. I've been saying I'm going to round out the rest of the site. So I'm going to do it when I get home. I promise. I'm saying it on the radio.
Yep.
I've been wanting to finish, not finish, but also just there's a lot of tools that aren't on the list. And also planning to add, there's a good friend and colleague, Darren Karapatwa, who's from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and a long time blog buddy. He calls me his blog father.
Yeah.
I talked to him in August about sort of the possibility about adding some mobile apps to that set, which I've somewhat resisted because I didn't think it was the same. Or sometimes it seems like when you talk about apps, you get so focused on the app. But I had seen this one called Tapestry that I was really impressed with. And I did my Domino story in there. And that kind of said, I think there's room to add within that same vein of web apps or websites for telling stories, the same framework that if it's free and if it works at least on iOS and Android, that it seems to me reasonable to fold it into that site.
Certainly in the moment in primary and secondary education, especially primary in the UK, there's been a great move to mobile, in particular where I'm working, to iOS, and there is some really nice stories. For folk in Scotland who maybe haven't seen the 50 Ways site, I would say it's just one of the best ways of exemplifying, is that a real word?
Exemplifying, that's a better word.
Yeah, exemplifying Web 2 stories, because you take this one story and you've told it again and again using all these different technologies, and it makes it really easy for folk to go in and see, right, that's what that does, that's what's good about that tool, and I think that's really useful. And I could see lots of nice iOS apps would be great for that, and there's a lot of good free ones for storytelling.
And it's funny, that was somewhat of an accident, because originally I was planning these workshops to do on this tour of Australia, and I had the idea about websites that could be used to do this multimedia storytelling, mainly because I had seen VoiceThread, and it was about the time that SlideShare added the capability to synchronize audio to presentations. And to me, that's fine, I have audio with presentations, but I could see it totally as a way to do a multimedia narrative. And then I said, okay, I'm going to do this site, you know, a workshop about all these different web tools. And I thought I was done. And then I realized, oh, in a workshop, you have to know how to use them.
And it's not just a list.
Yeah. You have to be able to help people understand what they can do. And that's why it made sense to me to take the same content, the story about Domino, and do it in these different tools. And, you know, frankly, there's no reason why you couldn't take either a well-known story and have exercises where people, because it turned out to be useful, because you can't always do it literally. So sometimes you have to figure out within the frame of a tool that maybe is more lending towards images. You can represent things in images, but some of the tools that maybe lean more towards some of the other media forms, like the comics. So when you're doing some of the comic apps, you have to get somewhat creative in how you can represent the characters and the actions. So it's less about, to me, about what you can produce at the end, and more about like what goes on to be able to communicate that story in these different forms.
Yeah, and rather than about the finish, it's about learning how to do things.
It is, although generally people just are excited to see a list of tools.
Yeah.
But, you know, originally it was really meant to be the process. So it's how do you come up with ideas for stories and story prompts, and where do you get media from, and some media sources for that. And then the thing about the tools is it's overwhelming. Like, if you go to a group of teachers, they want to know which one, and I can't really explain. So, and the whole point is to try one.
Yeah.
And if the tool doesn't work, you know, it doesn't do what you want, you know, try a different one.
Yeah. So I think that was, I can't remember exactly when I started reading What You Do, but I noticed the start of that site and have been, say, reading it enthusiastically ever since. And the next time, I think the big next big whoosh would be DS106, when you started getting involved with DS106. Were you in DS106 from the very beginning?
Yeah, fortunately, you know, I had the year before when Jim first taught it with just Mary Washington students before it was an open course in 2010. You know, I knew Jim; he was a friend and a colleague, and I had an interest, you know, from the 50 Ways and sort of what my colleague Brian Alexander and I kind of tried to term, what is web storytelling? How is it different? Because when people talk about digital storytelling, they often think of the digital narrative in a video format, which is very powerful. But we always felt like there was something really unique about the affordances of the web, of being able to link in and out, to be able to do things that were perhaps unique to the web in itself. So I was interested when Jim started doing his work, because I was also interested in blogs as a form of web publishing and the fact that his students were publishing work. And so in October or so, or November of 2010, when he, you know, blogged that he was thinking about setting up DS-106 to be an open course, you know, I had followed and been part of, you know, some of the first, the original MOOCs. I can say that word because October's over. I took a vow of MOOC abstinence in October. And so I took some of the CCK08 and sort of had a respect for that idea about learning in a network. And you know, I contacted Jim and said, you know, I'm interested in helping anyway. So in December, he arranged a Skype call. It was Jim and Martha Burtis from Mary Washington, myself, and Tom Woodward. And we just had this open brainstorming about how the course might work from a design standpoint and also from a technical one with WordPress. And Tom is brilliant. I'm a big fan of Tom Woodward. And it was his idea about this idea of an open assignment bank, because he kind of would tease Jim that, you know, Jim, you have your 10 holy assignments. And he says, I don't think they're all that good. You know, so typically in a course, the instructor makes one assignment that all the students do. And Tom's insight was, what if there was a way to crowdsource a collection of assignments and where people contributed to it, but you could also choose which ones that you did? And Martha literally strung this together the first time using a combination of Google Forms, grabbing an RSS feed off of the Google Forms, running it through scripts in WordPress that would generate. And it all worked, you know, right out of the bat for that, you know, 2011 course. So I was part of it as an open participant in DS-106 starting in... The course started in January of 2011, but because Jim had already announced it, people were already starting to do... there's a lot of animated gift activities.
Yeah, beforehand.
And then as the open assignment bank kind of came online, people were actually creating and doing some of the assignments before the Mary Washington students... even started. And it must have been kind of interesting for that first group of UMW students. They come into this class where there's these people in it that they don't know who are already doing things. And it was somewhat, the community was already in motion because, you know, Jim is highly networked and, you know, and people in that network would bring in some of their other colleagues. And there was just a lot of heady excitement at that time. And so I did 2011 as an open participant, and I got what I call the serious infection. So, you know, I was still working at my full-time job for a New Media Consortium, but I was just immensely interested in this kind of this dynamic of a group of students who are doing the work interacting with us open participants. And then, of course, you know, the radio just was emergent out of that, what we're using right now, because again, when we had that initial Skype call, you know, I remember Jim and I saying, like, people were telling him that he had to have something synchronous, like, and everybody thinks like Illuminate or Adobe Connect, and we just felt that was such it's an okay environment for like online conferences, but it really just pretty much did the lecture paradigm. And as a participant, your participation was down in that little box of chat. The presenter and the moderator had total control over the voice. And the biggest thing was, when the webinar ends, the whole system shuts down.
Yeah.
And so when, you know, Jim kind of broadcast this idea of a radio station, it was pretty electrifying. And then, you know, Grant Potter built it, you know, in 2 days. And we had no idea what was going to happen with it. But the idea of it being open, that people could contribute content, and then everybody just started trying to figure out how to do these live broadcasts. So it was really exciting just to experiment with radio, which is always fascinating because it's an old form of media, but there's this new dynamic. A lot of it because, you know, Twitter became the official channel for people to share.
You've got a back channel going straight away. And I think, I remember talking to somebody, I think Ewan McIntosh, about podcasting. And he said why it was interesting to people was because everybody had pretended to do it when they were a kid under their blankets with their radio. You know, it's just something that if you're of a certain age, and I presume almost every age, people listen. And talking about people listening, we've just got Bill. Hi, Bill.
Bill's a frequent listener, Bill.
Yeah.
Byzantium Books, hello to Virginia Beach, Bill. Good to see that you're out there. I had a chance to meet Bill a couple of weeks ago.
Just to make him blush, I really love some of the things he does in DS106 and the way he's got a really playful mind with words.
He does.
With ideas and, you know, with
his
punished behavior, I suppose.
And he kind of talks about it in the frame of work that he does. Mm. He's not allowed to do stuff like this. So the fact that he's going to put this in on his own free time, like you and many other people do, is amazing.
Well, I think that's the really nice thing about DS106 is that it does allow you to, and I've always felt that the people who are leading it have been very generous with what they would consider a contribution to what you're doing. I mean, of course, if you open online, people can't stop you, but they could resent you and they could get annoyed. And most of the stuff that I've done on DS106 has really excited me, that I have lost a whole weekend to, has been something that veers off into the one field or the other, away from the main idea, and then people say, oh, that's interesting, and that's lovely. And there's this, you said it was an infection.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely as well a fever when you get into something.
Mm-hmm.
And I at the moment I haven't done anything on DS106 for a week, and I'm not,
you're getting the shakes.
No, well, I'm not too bothered. But when I'm in that particular zone of excitement, I'm really enjoying it for one, but I'm learning like mad, and I'm pushing myself harder than I would in any other kind of learning experience for some reason.
Yeah, and you know, we could try. I'm certainly interested in speculating the why on that, but I think you know that sensation when you get this idea that you can't let go of, and then you're there at 4 a.m. trying to synchronize something, and it's less about trying to create this big thing that's going to impress someone. It's just like this question: I have this idea, and I think I can imagine how it might come to being, but it's more that pursuit of the thing that you produce.
Yeah.
Almost, I mean, it's very satisfying to finish and publish, and then of course it takes twice as long to blog than it did to create. But it's an electric excitement, and I'm really interested in trying to figure out, you know, how do we tap into that. So it's not just about the course of DS106, and a big part of it is the people who've come to it, and the community aspect. And I don't know how to like quantify it. Like, if I wanted to do this experience in another domain, you know, and I haven't actually thought about how this would go about, but you know, it would be less of how the thing was designed and built from the beginning. So it's got to be something that can change and evolve, and like being less cemented in a technology or a particular, even a structure, gives you that flexibility to do things to allow to say, I never thought we would be doing live radio broadcasts. Mm. So, you know, Jim has this great expression for it about the pedagogy of uncertainty. Yeah. And that means where you give enough room in a community or a course experience to allow for the unexpected to emerge, which often doesn't turn out fantastic, but when it does,
it's, yeah. That's what I'd be really interested in seeing, because you were saying earlier when you were working, the DS106 became more interesting than your work.
Yeah.
And it gives people who are very often working in a somewhat parallel universe to the DS106 universe, but there's just a wee bit more of a excitement. And how do we bring that into mainstream education? Well, I know Mary Washington is mainstream education, but how do we bring that into K-12, what Americans call, what we call primary and secondary education here. How do we do that? That's what I would love to be able to to see. And I've seen people do interesting things, but in pockets. And I guess DS-106 is still a pocket, although it's a pocket with a big wave effect. You know, lots of people in education or online education have heard about it. But how do we get it into mainstream education?
I have the answer right here.
Yeah. That's it. Okay, folks.
Good night. Tune in next week for the answer.
But, I mean, one of the answers might be that the stuff that you're working on to build a portable... And I know you don't like the phrase DS-106 in a box.
I don't mind it. It was kind of a joke.
Yeah.
But more about, like, something that people would think, oh, I just need to install this and I'll have DS-106.
Yeah, but you don't have DS-106 by installing it.
Right.
What you have is the tools that you can build a DS-106 on, I think.
Yeah.
And what I'd be really interested in locally here is for us to have the tools that we can that we could use something like that. And at the moment, I think I mentioned earlier when I was talking to you when we were offline about Scotland's National Internet Glow, which has a WordPress setup that is very, very tied down. It's got 5 plugins and you can't get more. It's got 6 themes and you can't get more, and it's working off WordPress, I think 1747 or something. That's the year it came out.
Okay.
You know, it's an old, it's WordPress 2 or something like that.
Right.
I have been saying to the powers that be for the last 5 years that please give us the MetaWeblog API, which would give us mobile and give us the ability to install plugins. But then if we had that, we could then just take your big box of tricks, gift to the free world, and drop it in there, and that would be a fantastic start, I think.
You could, and that's something I've been really interested in working on for a long time, because everybody says, I like the idea of the assignment bank, or I like, we had a conversation with some people who really wanted to do, have a daily create, but for people of Spanish-speaking languages.
Yeah.
So, you know, the things we built is, I found it's like a lot of fun to build things, you know, this, to get them to work. And that's what we've done in DS-106. And, you know, it's not just me. You know, Martha Burtis has done a lot. Tim Owens has done a lot. Jim does a couple. No, I'm just kidding. it's not just one person's doing this. But I've always had envisioned that we could abstract out some the capabilities and pull out all the things that are hardwired for DS-106. And so I started work, and I'm about 80% done of taking the DS-106 assignment bank and having that be more or less a WordPress theme that you would install, and it has all the functionality built into it. And I have it down now to, it would need at most 2 plugins, and that really depends if you're going to want to use Feed WordPress to synchronize in people's contributions. That's not required. But the idea is to make it flexible enough that it could be a bank of anything. It could be lessons, it could be recipes, it could be, you know, whatever sort of collection. But with that capability where people can contribute new ones and have all the functionality. And so that's the first phase. But we hope to do that with a number of the DS-106 tools, the Daily Create, the Central Course aggregator, which is the thing that subscribes to all the blogs. I really envision this being kind of its own separate WordPress install that just does that mechanical function of bringing everything in, but then presenting it as a normal blog flow it's impossible to follow. So I really would like to see it something that would could potentially be as easy to scan as something like Google Reader used to be. And then also Jim and I talked about the capability of maybe switching the functionality. If you have more graphic material, that it could have the feel of the Tumblr dashboard, which is really good for visual. And so tomorrow when I go to see Martin Hawksey, he's actually done a lot of this work in his work on the Octel site to make like a reader like. And I really like some of the functionality he's built in. So I'm kind of hoping that we can sit down in a day and maybe try to hack most of that together. But, you know, the idea is, you know, it would be, you know, this is stuff is WordPress based. So, you know, and you can sound like a WordPress junkie on this. But, you know, the more I've been thinking about it, and we were talking earlier in your living room about the joyous days of HyperCard. Mm. And what I reflected on was HyperCard was a tool that I could use to make tools that you could use, but you could modify and change. And I'm finding as I do more WordPress development that it's got a lot of that attribute to it. So you think of it as a blogging or publishing platform, but you know, within all the functions and structure of WordPress, you can intercept and re-change it the way it works, both from the dashboard side and the front end side. So it's to me, it's so highly extensible. So I kind of have this idea of making these not like closed tools that you just use, but you know, you could take it and make it do something that I haven't figured out. If you have that capability, or you could just work on the theming side of it. So you know, my first project is kind of working off of a bare bones Bootstrap theme. So it doesn't really look that complicated, but if you want to completely reskin it, that's a pretty flexible format.
Yeah. What I think is really exciting is that you've got, what you're doing is giving people this DS-106 in a box. So if you're not technical, you can use that.
Yeah.
And up until now, for DS-106, you've needed technical people. You've needed people, and I know you've done work on the ET MOOC.
Yeah.
You did stuff for them.
Yeah.
And a few other people have done that, but it always needs an effort from somebody that's got a bit of coding chops there that can do that. And right. what we need in education a lot is the lack of that. You know, we need to be able to get away from that so people can just slot it in. But we need to leave in this business that if somebody is interested in bending the tool, they can.
Yeah,
and then, so many sort of educational or sites that are given to educators haven't got that flexibility. And I think that's because we don't know what we're going to be doing tomorrow. You know, we're just scratching the surface of this stuff. You know, how long's the internet been here? No time at all. You know, we don't know what we're going to do with it in 10 years' time. I don't know what my kids are going to do with it.
Yeah.
And they need to have something that's not... They need simple tools, but they also need tools that are adaptable, yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, you'll be able to... You could use it out of the box. That's the whole plan. And the hardest part of it is making that general. It's completely more complex than I thought.
Yeah.
Especially because right now, and you know, I'll definitely do a demo for you. You know, I've got most of the internal dashboard. So, like when you edit, you install a theme, and often there's a screen where you can customize and modify it. And generally, it was the stuff I used to do in code. So I'm making it now. So if you don't want to call it assignments, you get to name what the things are, and you define the size of the icons, and you create the names for the types of things. So in the DS-106 assignment bank, it's audio and design and visual, but you'll be able to change it to say, sports and leisure and shoe manufacturing.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to call them. But when you change the names of those and you want to allow people to change the names of those, then every time you change it, you have to be able to dynamically rewrite all the names of the tags that it creates. And so I got most of that working. Actually, the hardest part I'm trying to figure out when I get back home next week is to use the media uploader. So you can easily identify the thumbnails. I mean, it's not that important to the site, but to me it's important to have in there.
Yeah.
And that part has been really complicated to figure out, but I'm this close. So I hope to have a beta version out. I had hoped originally to have it out in September, and then that became late September, and so now I'm hoping late November.
Yeah. No, I mean it does look kind of really exciting.
And I think the daily crate is going to be easier. But, you know, one of the things I want to change with the main daily crate is right now it's tied to Flickr and SoundCloud. It's tied to these media services because we wanted something that would be able to present it in that nice kind of visual format that it aggregates from tags and things like that. And there's problems now. So in YouTube, we use a TubePress plugin that kind of creates the gallery, but YouTube doesn't allow you to search anymore by tags. Yeah. So that doesn't really work as well. Flickr sometimes takes a long time for tagged photos to show up. SoundCloud, the reason why there's not many audio daily creates is because you have to create that nice little widget, mm-hmm. you have to create a group. And you can only create one SoundCloud account.
Yeah, one group.
So I've created about 40 different SoundCloud accounts. And it's just not sustainable. And then also, it limits, you know, people may want to just tweet their photos.
Yeah.
And people may want to put their audio somewhere else. So the way I want to recast it is kind of the way the old Daily Shoots I used to work. So you'll be able to respond to it via Twitter, mm-hmm. with just a link to the thing that you created. So when we have a visual assignment, it'll just be...
parse out the image URL, basically, yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, we'll just say, you know, tweet to at TDDS106DC, include the daily create hashtag and a link to your thing. And rather than trying to bring in the media, we're just going to embed the tweets in the site. And however Twitter, you know, is able to embed media and link to it.
It's doing a better.
Yeah, so you'll actually see like a list of tweets that mm-hmm. respond to it. And to me, that will make it more flexible because then people can have different groupings than by media. So you could have just, you know, daily create. Today's daily create is in, you know, math. And tomorrow's in you know, Scottish history.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because you don't need to have a template set up for that particular type of assignment because whatever it is
right.
would be you're relying on Twitter to show it. Yeah. Uh-huh. So we just need to keep our fingers crossed that Twitter keeps chuffing along the right way.
Yeah. And if not, you know, I've developed the writing ones where they're mm-hmm. actually submitted to the site.
Yeah.
And it's possible to think about doing that for all kinds. And I really enjoy the writing daily crates. They're some of my favorites because, you know, it gives you a chance to be extremely creative or very simple.
Yeah.
But within text only, which is as much storytelling as anything.
Yeah, I think those are probably the ones I do least of.
They're easiest.
Yeah. I think writing is a really difficult thing to do. Yeah. And I don't... Maybe I don't mind taking a bad photograph as much as I would mind. So I don't know. That's why DS106 is really interesting as well, because one of the things I think that's interesting for a learner and for getting learners to do is interrogate themselves about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Is that something that... I mean, some of the daily creates, you will admit, are silly.
Yeah.
You know, that to the extreme. And even doing something like that makes you think an awful lot about how you present yourself, mm-hmm. whether you should do this, because the one I can remember most is one where you had to say, "I love you, DS106, 10 times to YouTube. Now, a lot of people who are doing DS106 won't be regular YouTube users, or if they do, I mean, my usual YouTube content would be a screencast, which has got no danger whatsoever, except people saying you're mumbling, John, you know, but you're putting your face there and you're being silly, and there's no way that you can avoid if you're going to do that. But so then you've got to think about that. What does that feel like to do that? And that was really interesting, actually.
Yeah, and you know, your original question about, you know, how you integrate this with the schools, the power of the things, a lot of DS106, and especially the daily create, is the idea is to not just do the things that you know you can do. So mm-hmm. you know you can photograph, but it's doing something that's not as extreme or risky to do mm-hmm. In the area that you maybe don't feel like you're as strong. So the whole idea is to stretch your skills in areas that you're not as good at. And because they're not graded, there's less of this threat of like, it has to be good or it has mm-hmm. to be perfect. It's just, it's the try that counts.
And as a community, you seem to have got, that I've been in various online forums and things where you really cannot make a mistake mm-hmm. because people get flamed to pieces, and you know, just, and DS106 is almost the opposite of that. And anything that is put on there, somebody comes in and says, that's interesting, welcome, you know, hello, and they're friendly straight away. And I think that that's the bit that's more important than the technology, almost, as the spirit of the course.
And I think there's somehow it's emerged as this message that it's okay to not be perfect in public, which is counter to just about every other situation, not only online but offline. Is this fear of embarrassing oneself or to not do your best. And so it's a safe place to experiment and try. And what more important to have in a school environment?
Yeah, is to encourage kids to try everything. And you see it in primary education. I'm thinking the drawing or something. By the time kids get to 9, there's a good majority, you know, number of them who will say, "I am not good at drawing."
And they stop. Paper. Yeah.
And they'll do that for drawing, they'll do it for maths, they'll do it for all these different things, because they've had so many experiences of failure. And I know there's this whole idea on the web where it's good to fail, but for lots of people who've failed a lot, it's not that great. It doesn't feel good. But DS106 sort of gives you ways to actually contribute, but you can't fail. And quite often, if you do something, you think, oh, a disaster, somebody will come in and say, "That was really interesting because of X, Y, or Z," which has got nothing to do with what you're thinking about. But it keeps you going and it keeps you engaged.
Yeah. And we definitely have. I mean, DS106 is not the only place, you know, that happens. So there's been a number of really great. And there's a nice crossover from some of the other MOOCs that have happened this past year. ET MOOC, ETC MOOC, the summer CL, the Connected Learning MOOC. That was kind of hooked in with Mozilla. And I think some of the people who are currently in the headless kind of came through some of those channels. And I love that kind of cross-connection. And there's now some people like Mariana Funes, you know, who's actually been doing some of the phonar assignments with Jonathan Worth's photography class. And when I was visiting with Helen Keegan, she was talking about her classes in the spring. She wants them to, you know, to maybe have a week where they do a DS106 assignment and another week where they do phonar. And that even more blends that fuzzy boundary of where the course ends.
Yeah. Well, that's I think in the summer, when there was no DS106 there, somebody decided that we just should keep doing things. And for a while, people kept doing things, and that was really interesting.
They did, yeah. So, yeah, I tried the... every now and then I tried the challenge to ask people to do a daily create every day, which is it's stupid, so don't do it. But try, and then, you know, Talkie Tina tried to do a GIF every day in August, and
I think I made halfway through the month, actually. I think it's just made halfway through a month doing that.
And you're not embarrassed, you don't feel like you failed, did you?
When I didn't make it, no, I just felt, oh, I'm tired of doing GIFs.
But that language of failure is so it's so wide, especially in higher ed, and people have this thing of, I dropped out of a MOOC, and it's why isn't it, like, you know, I tried it and it wasn't for me, or I did a small amount of this and I learned something. And it's always looking at that negative side, because it's that eye on the end goal instead of the path there.
Well, what's the old black and white movie? Why wish for the moon, and we've got the stars. And the stars. What's that? No, what is it? Not moon.
I don't know, but it's beautiful. I love the way you say it.
The idea that, you know, you've got something out of it, and that would be good. Do you think we should maybe wrap up now?
I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And you're going to cook me dinner, right?
I hope I'm going to cook you dinner, because we're in the kitchen and we'll need to turn off the mic to cook. If you're listening now, thanks very much for listening. I think there's been the odd tweet, but I've been watching. Oh, there has been. I've been just joining Listen to Alan, and I'm going to broadcast this on EduTalk at some point, probably on Wednesday this week.
I've been dreaming of being on. I see all the people you're doing EduTalk, and I figured I had to come to.
You don't need to, because we can do it Skype. I'm really interested, and this is us going past the cutoff point of the crossover between different layers of education, like what nursery education can give to primary education, or nursery education can give to secondary education, or tertiary education can give to primary education.
Yeah,
and when you see something as playful as some of the online stuff, you're thinking, I've got to get that in to younger children. You know,
I had some great experiences in March when I was at some international schools in Japan and Singapore. You know, I got to do some of the storytelling activities. Mm-hmm. You know, I did an adaptation of the Four Icons story with second graders,
mm-hmm.
and it was brilliant. And I did five picture stories with fifth graders, and they were one of the best groups I've mm-hmm. ever seen go with this because of their excitement, because of kind of almost that lack of self-censorship yeah. that kids have and should have, where they just want to try something and don't get wrapped up in the judgment layer that we learn to evolve as we go on in our educational careers.
And one of the things as a teacher, I think, is that you've got to let the children fall at this point, and that's a really difficult thing to do as a teacher sometimes, is just give up that control. And I know quite often in my career I did the wrong thing,
mm-hmm.
that I said, no, that's too complicated, you're not going to manage that, and shut that down. And then other times I let things run, and it in general worked out at least interestingly.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a teacher you don't want people to not succeed, mm-hmm. so but again, you know, what's a failure and what's a valiant attempt.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll call that a wrap, and we'll leave the stream to whoever wants it.
Sounds good. All the way from Scotland.
Yeah. Cheers.